You're listening to.
You're listening to.
You're listening to.
You're listening to. Sci-Fi News.
I'm excited. I'm stoked. Iron Man 3, Star Trek, Pacific Rim, Man of Steel. So many good movies coming out. I cannot wait. Hi, I'm Aaron. This is Sci-Fi Dig, show 333, and I'm here to talk to you about science fiction and fantasy and comics and all that wonderful genre stuff that us geeks love. Of course, I'm going to talk about a little bit of Fringe this week, and I also wanted to talk about, if you have not gone and looked up the Pacific Rim trailer from WonderCon, oh my God, this movie looks like it's going to be so much fun. Is it going to be a game changer? Is it going to be one of those movies where you're like, man, it just was so heavy, it blew me away? I don't know. What it looks like to me is it's going to be fun, and I cannot wait to see it. I also cannot wait to see Iron Man 3. I am so excited. Actually, about the time you're listening to this podcast, hopefully, I will be there to see it. My schedule is not working out that I'm going to be able to make it during the weekend. There's not a midnight showing on Thursday night, and since I work weekends and the movie's 2.5 hours, there's no way I can hit it and make it to work in time. So I think all of us are planning on going on Monday. My wife is even excited about Star Trek, so that has me extra excited because, well, she's got a thing for, Chris Pine, but whatever. And you need to check out the Pacific Rim trailer. It's looking really good. We have Wolverine. I haven't talked much about that, but there's a new trailer for that out. Just all kind of good stuff coming our way. Anyhow, David Tennant is saying that it might be him and Matt Smith. That might be the only two doctors for the big 50. And, I don't know. I'm assuming since they're doing this big 50th anniversary and they've really been talking this up, that the other actors probably think this is going to be a big moneymaker and they probably want more money. Some of the actors, I think, just do not want to do it because they don't want to be pigeonholed into that. And I understand that. But with Doctor Who, it would be nice to have all the doctors come in. I'm not sure what all the reasons are behind it, or if maybe it's just a bunch of hullabaloo to try to get more press. But we'll see what happens with that. Two former Star Trek writers are teaming up to make a series. I think it's going to be a series of movies because I'm thinking that if you're going to use Kickstarter, then why even try to do... Why try to shoehorn into any kind of time limit? Why not just do it however it plays out? But David Gerold and DC Fontana are Star Trek writers, and Fontana's name comes up on a lot of Star Trek. They're teaming up alongside Star Trek the Motion Picture director, Director's Edition producer David C. Fine, to adapt Gerald Starwolf's series of novels into a TV series, and are using Kickstarter to make it. According to them, they don't think that the networks know what to do with sci-fi. So you can head over to Kickstarter and find us and see exactly. I haven't actually headed to the Kickstarter page to see exactly what they're offering up. They have 4 scripts for the show have already been written. And if the team hits its $650,000 fundraising goal, they'll produce the first episode. For every $500,000 they can raise after that, they'll produce another one until hopefully they made the first 4 episode arc. Now, I have a whole bunch of problems with this. First of all, if you want to go ahead and you want to do the fundraising goal, that's a lot of money. But after you hit the $650,000, why not sell that? And make enough money to produce the second and third. Kickstarter, love it, hate it, whatever. I know some people seem to think that Kickstarter is where you go and you give somebody money and they give you like a limited edition something or other. And that's not what it is. It's just financial backing. It might all fall apart. You might never see anything for your money. It might be 20 years down. You might be dead before anything comes out. My thing is, kickstart off the first episode, get it out there, and, you can set up a Kickstarter for a second episode because obviously we want an arc. We want to get all the stories, but if you're going to leave it on a cliffhanger and nothing happens, how is that any different than you telling me that network TV doesn't know what to do with sci-fi? So basically, you're telling me that you need over $2 million to make this 4-episode show. Why not just set your goal higher and figure out how to produce a You can do it in episodes, but have enough to produce the whole thing so we get a final story. Now, I'm just saying that, you know, people need to think this through. You know, telling me that the network TV doesn't know what to do with sci-fi, I don't necessarily disagree with that, but telling me that, hey, you're going to make the first one if you get it, and then the other ones, we still don't know if those are going to get made or not, and then you're going to leave them on a cliffhanger. That's no different than anything else. I mean, Kickstarter's great for funding artistic projects. You know, I'm a fan, but I just shake my head in wonderment at, you know, some of the things that that, you know, get made or don't get made, or people that put money in and then complain they didn't get what they were promised. Well, there's a lot of things in there. You're a financial backer. It's not a store. You don't go there and buy stuff. And I think people don't understand Kickstarter a lot of the times. Anyway, if you happen to live in the US of A, for May 7th, you're going to get some good films on DVD and some other things as well. You, of course, are going to get Jack Reacher. And I haven't seen this yet, but I'm looking forward to it. It looks like a good action flick. You're going to get Mama. I really enjoyed this film. I thought it had so many creep factors to it. I mean, the ending may not have been what everybody wanted, but I like the ending because it wasn't. You get to the ending, and it's not like everybody's happily ever after. They did what they wanted to do, and I think it worked out really well. The Great Escape is going to get a Blu-ray release. Fringe Season 5 is going to be available, as well as Fringe the Series. I'm going to come back to that momentarily. You are going to get Flashpoint Season 5, which is kind of a great show. I mean, it's a real fun show. I really enjoy that show. And that seems to be pretty much all it is as far as sci-fi is concerned. If you live in the UK, you have a couple of things. You're going to get Doctor Who this week. Thank God. Doctor Who, the Visitation Special Edition, is going to be available to you. Avengers Earth's Mightiest Heroes, Volume 6, just released a season already. And you're going to get Black Mirror, which is a crazy, crazy show. I've only seen the first episode of Season 1, but I always mean to go back and watch more of Season 1, but I just haven't done it yet. But this show is so crazy. It's not necessarily science fiction. It's the episodes, you present it with a situation and you just kind of see how it plays out, and it's kind of interesting. I really enjoyed it. As a writer, it's got to be a lot of fun to be able to do that. And let's see what else you're going to get. That seems to be about it. You're not getting a lot of sci-fi this week. I mean, you're getting Doctor Who, so you really can't complain, right? I mean, you get Doctor Who, you know, hey. Anyhow, back to Fringe. The complete fifth season, this is for the U.S. stores, is listed at Amazon on Blu-ray for $34.96, so $35. And the series is listed for $179 on Blu-ray. Now, a couple things you need to know. I'm not sure if the series is giving you anything extra here. It doesn't seem like it's... It doesn't seem as though that they're giving you anything extra by buying the box set. You have to know that I bought series 1 through 4 from the UK. It is on Blu-ray. It is not, it's region free. And I think it cost me like $32. So you could actually buy that and buy season 5 on the day it comes out and get that cheaper than you can get the entire series and have cash left to spend. I am not going to buy season 5 when it comes out. I'm going to wait till I get that part into that part of my presentation of Fringe, and then I will buy it then, because there's not really any benefit of buying it as soon as it comes out. I'll wait till a sale. With any luck, around Christmas time, they will be doing some Fringe sales on Blu-ray. As if you follow tech news and things like that, you know, as time goes on, more and more people are getting away from discs. Everybody's like, oh, you know, you're streaming, and that's great. If you have some kind of great pipe that you can stream stuff through, great. I do not. And what's funny is everybody I know, even people that have good, solid connections that do streaming, then they watch it on Blu-ray and they cannot believe how much better it looks on Blu-ray. I don't want all the clutter either. And I do a lot of renting of things. But shows that I know I'm going to go back and watch again, I'm definitely going to get on DVD. Unfortunately, I'm kind of waiting for a decent price on the Babylon 5 set. I only have the first season. Everything else I rented for that. And it seems as though, like, when I go to the store, sometimes, like, they have season 5. Well, it's like, really, I want 1 through 4. And I have one, and it's the big fat one, and I really like the box of that. But I know that they do slimline cases. I'm kind of waiting for those to come around, like $12, and I'll pick up the rest of those, because the Babylon 5 is definitely something I'm going to go back and watch. It's on my list of the million things that I want to watch before I die. Anyhow, I have a nice review from one of our listeners, and I forgot to play it last week because I'm a little scatterbrained. So here it is.
Hello, Diggers. This is Shane from Florida. I've been promising Aaron this review for a few months since I got this book as a Christmas present, but I've been a little slow, as you can tell. I am here to review today the Encyclopedia of Weird Westerns, Supernatural and Sci-Fi Elements in Novels, Pulps, Comics, Films, Television, and Games. This is a very cool book. As far as genre, I love sci-fi, obviously, and horror, fantasy, but another genre I love just as much is westerns. And if you meld the two elements, westerns with the supernatural, sci-fi, or horror, then to me that is one of the most perfect mixes you can have. This book came up as a recommendation to me. I saw it, put it on my wish list to get, and it was my wife that got me it for a present. It's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and it's also available as Kindle editions as well. This is an interesting book. I love encyclopedias. It covers comics from years ago, specifically comic series that deal with westerns, but also comic series that had western issues. Like you'll have references to Superman and Justice League issues that were just about westerns or had western elements where they went back in time or dealt with a western character. Like Jonah Hex, for example. Of course, there's a whole section on Jonah Hex in the book. In terms of movies, it's the same. It's a lot of movies that incorporated elements of westerns, incorporated horror elements. Like one example is The Burglars. TV shows, very good. In reference to TV shows, there are a lot of shows that were western themed and had those elements. All of you will know Briscoe County and the original Wild Wild West series. But it also touches on TV shows that had elements, again, like in comics, just Star Trek, of course. We all remember some of those episodes, like from the original series, the Spectre of the Gun episode. In Next Gen, there was a couple. There was the Fistful of Data's episode, which is very memorable. That leads me to something that kind of bothered me. In regards to those references, of course, there's going to be omissions in any book, and this one had some really blatant ones that bothered me. Those of you who remember the old Battlestar Galactica show fondly remember an episode called The Lost Warrior, where it was a western-type town where a Cylon was abandoned, and they called him Old Red Eye, because no one could beat him in a gunfight because, of course, he was metal, and they were using old western-style guns. That was a really great episode. My memories are that it was a really great episode. And that was very western-themed, and that was omitted and kind of bugged me because it was one that I took to heart. But one of the most glaring omissions in the book will bug me, Aaron, definitely, and all you diggers out there who are Supernatural fans. They didn't even reference Supernatural, the TV series. And one of the key elements, obviously, is the gun made by Samuel Colt to kill demons. Not only is that a part of the series, but there's also one episode where they went back in time to the Days of the West. So I wish that had been referenced in here, and it kind of bugged me that it wasn't. One lesser one that they omitted, and again, it's because of my personal taste, is the anime Vampire Hunter D, which had a very western feel, and it's one of my favorite animes of all time. They did reference a lot of anime in the book. But that being said, there's always going to be omissions to anything, and there's more to like about this book than not to like. There is just a wealth of information of comics, books, TV shows, movies. I've enjoyed looking through it. There's stuff I'm bookmarked to get in the future, of course, like any of these books. And I highly recommend it to any of you who are definitely Western fans who'd be listening to this podcast, because you're definitely fans of sci-fi as well. But just as another reference book in your library of science fiction, horror, and fantasy. This is Shane signing out, and thanks for listening.
Thanks, Shane. I'll be investigating that book. Add it to the pile. It's just so much stuff, so much good stuff. I've said this before, a great time to be a fan of the genre entertainment. There's just so many things out there. Now, with that being said, we're going to jump right into the Fringe episode, Bad Dreams. This episode is Season 1, Episode 17. The title is Bad Dreams. It originally aired on April 21st, 2009. Olivia keeps having these dreams where she thinks she's killing random people who she does not know. The first scene we get is kind of a shocking scene of a young mother has her daughter in a stroller and rolls it down the steps to the subway, and there are some balloons attached to the stroller. One of the balloons gets away. She's trying to reach for it, and somebody shoves her in front of the train. Now, Olivia, cut right back to Olivia in bed, and she wakes up, covered in sweat, and realizes that was her that shoved her, and she's not quite sure what's going on. So the first clip that I have is of her trying to get Broyles to let her investigate this case, the death of this woman, because she can't not figure out what is happening to her. So she goes to Broyles, and I love the conversation to have. We don't get enough of Broyles, and this whole season has been building their relationship, their trust. They went from being, I don't want to say enemies, but definitely being on polar opposites in a lot of ways, to slowly him realizing that she does a good job and she's not the person that his friend that she had prosecuted or gone after in the past, makes her out to be, and realizes she's a good agent. And so they have this conversation.
I want permission to go to New York to investigate a case.
What is it?
A suicide on the subway.
I read about it in the paper this morning. How exactly is this a case?
I believe that the woman may have been murdered. There may have been extraordinary circumstances.
What kind of extraordinary circumstances? I'm listening.
That's all I'm comfortable saying at the moment, sir.
Dunham, are you all right? For the last few weeks, you've seemed distracted, on edge.
I haven't been sleeping very well. I wouldn't be asking if this wasn't important.
Dunham, you're a crucial part of this operation. You're very valuable to me.
Thank you.
Hours. Then I want you back on the job, head clear.
Thank you.
Now she investigates and cannot really figure out what's happening. As the episode goes on, obviously they tie a certain individual. They see him in some of the camera shots. They tie him to the case, and they're not quite, we're going to get there. But in the meantime, she can't figure out what's happening. Another murder takes place. She feels as though she's there. She thinks she's cracking up. And so she goes to Walter, and he has him examine her to see. She explains what's going on and has him examine her. And of course, Peter just thinks that they're bad dreams or whatever, but she's trying to explain that they are very vivid and very real. And she can remember all the details, and it's just like she was there, and it just has her rather rattled.
Olivia, it was a nightmare.
It felt like I was really there.
No, you were asleep in your bed.
Wait a minute. Have you experienced any nausea, Agent Dunham? Rashes, hair loss, even a strand or two on the pillow?
No.
Any pain urinating or blood?
I don't think you're helping.
Is that it?
Yeah, a Geiger counter.
Not a rat.
I thought you might have teleported to New York in your sleep and killed her. Wouldn't that have been wondrous? But even the most controlled matter-to-energy transmutation leaves behind some background radiation, so... Ergo, you are not actually there.
Great. Well, I'm glad we got that cleared up.
Astral?
Astrid.
Rejection. Spirit walk, as it were. No. You wouldn't have had sufficient corporeal form to interact with the young woman.
Here we go. It's like listening to a broken record, but the lyrics keep on changing. She had a bad dream.
You know, I could smell the platform. I saw her baby staring at me. I saw her face before I saw the news. How is that possible?
Opium?
It wasn't just a dream. Wasn't.
Now, of course, you know, Olivia does a pretty good job. Antor does a pretty good job of playing this character who has these friends, these people she's built a trust around. And she's a little bit, not only is she rattled from what's going on, but the fact that Peter doesn't fully believe that, this is all happening. He thinks it's just bad dreams or whatever. Obviously has her a little upset because she needs people to stand behind her and believe in her. Anyway, the next clip is some more time passes and they have more discussion on what has happened to her. They're trying to figure out exactly why she's experiencing all this.
I remember things from the crime scene. I remember pushing her.
You know, dreams aren't always literal. Perhaps you killed this young woman in some less direct way.
No. We just watched her kill herself.
Perhaps you compelled her to jump using your mind. Do you have any reason to want her dead? Romantic rival, perhaps?
What?
I didn't even know her.
Then why did you kill her?
I don't know.
Stop. Both of you. Stop. Nobody killed anybody.
I'm surprised at you, Peter. Agent Dunham is your friend. You trust her. She says she killed that girl. Are you so presumptuous to believe her only when she says what you want to hear? Your mother was a bit like that. Consider this question. What is mankind's oldest dream?
World peace?
Oh, hardly. It's a social construct imposed by an awareness of our own mortality.
Should have gone with great taste, less filling, huh?
What is the greatest desire of the weak and the subjugated? Of the man whose fire is stolen by an opponent whose only advantage is the luck of superior size.
Who's stealing fire?
I think we're cavemen in this story.
Whose woman is wrenched away by brutality and force.
Sexist cavemen at that.
Simple. To kill with thought. To wish someone dead. To murder with the mind.
Come on. That's ridiculous.
You're right, I'm sure. Unless, of course, it happens again.
Now, what I like about the clip, first of all, I need to set up. They go and they look at the tapes of the subway and they see the woman jump in front of the train. Okay, so they've seen her kill herself, although, you know, in Olivia's mind, she pushed her. But what I like about this clip, and again, going, it all plays back into Walter. And, you know, I talked a bit about this the last episode about how for him, you know, once you're in the zone and you're focusing on the science, everything else kind of falls away. And he, you know, in his mind, this is completely plausible. Maybe she did kill this woman somehow. And Peter just doesn't want to believe it. But Walter's always open to every possibility. He tries to, look at everything without emotion getting in the way. Anyway, they're not able to, you know, figure anything out. And a second murder happens. A guy and a woman are in a restaurant. And of course, in Olivia's dream, she's the woman. And for whatever reason, they get into an argument and she takes a knife and she just basically guts him. And then she wakes up and then they find the person who has been injured. And she goes to the hospital and tries to interview the wife to figure out, you know, what possibly could have happened. Now I'm going to have two clips together here. I'm going to have that clip of her and Peter. And she has a small breakdown in the hospital where she's exhausted because she hasn't been sleeping well. She's trying to figure these things out. She's very confused and frustrated, and she ends up just kind of like, you know, hugging him. And again, like I said in the past, their relationship and how it grows is very organic, and it's one of the reasons that it's one of the things that sells this show. And if you don't think that sells a show when you have two leads that end up being together, forming some sort of relationship, you watch this, you watch Babylon 5. You watch Babylon 5 with Sheridan and Delenn. You know, I don't care if you like Babylon 5. If you don't like Babylon 5, well, you're just crazy. Best sci-fi show ever. Anyway, On both that show and in Fringe, the relationships are so organic, the way that they grow. And that is what sells it. They didn't just throw them in there and mix it up and say, okay, these two people are going to be, you know, in love or whatever. It's a very slow, organic process that brings them here. And that's one of the reasons I like this show, because it makes the characters very real. When's the last time, you know, you worked with the opposite sex in a job and like the next day you guys were knocking boots? Never, you know? And you know, the way that this works out, it works, you know, it does a very good job of making a very organic relationship. And this is going to be important because since it's organic and it is growing over the period of the season, okay, which means we're getting little reveals about the character, about what makes them tick. We're getting little reveals about their past to one another, okay? They're revealing this to one another, getting to know one another. It's very important as we go into season 2 and 3, so please keep that in mind. Now, the next clip is of the hospital. Then after that, they go to the restaurant where this happened, and Olivia again kind of has a bit of a breakdown. Anyway, I'm going to play the clips back to back here.
I tried to kill him.
A half dozen witness statements say she stabbed her husband.
I was there.
No, you were 300 miles away.
And somehow I'm killing these people in my dreams. Hello, Agent Olivia Dunham. This is Peter Bishop.
Hi.
So what can you tell us, Doctor?
The damage was quite severe. Upper and lower intestines both shredded. She essentially gutted him. He's going to die. That's why they gave her permission to be here.
Who is sitting here?
Lady, this isn't the Palm. We don't keep a seating chart.
Who was it?
Whoa.
Was I there? Was it me?
Agent Dunham. Just some guy. He comes in every now and then. Blonde hair. He's got a scar on his face.
I know who that is.
What the hell is wrong with you? You think you can do whatever you want? What are you, crazy? I'm gonna sue you guys.
Olivia, stop. What's going on?
That man that he described, I've seen him before.
What? Where?
That's a curious word. So it's got nothing to do with going underwater.
No. UNSUB stands for unidentified subject.
Actually, should more logically mean going above water.
And still no.
Well, I certainly hope we find him. What are we looking for?
I think it's after this.
Remarkable. This is entirely new.
What?
You're talking about the coffee.
Mm. Yes, what is it?
Cinnamon?
Yes.
Wow, that's quite good. Delightful, really.
There.
Blonde hair, a scar.
And he was at both crime scenes.
So he's our link.
Interesting. No, not the coffee. Although I was wondering if we can...
Walter?
Get...
Please.
What? You say he was at the table where you dreamt you were sitting, and he was on the platform where you dreamt you were standing.
Yes.
And in your dreams, you got many of the actual details correct. Is that right?
Yes.
But you did not see him in your dreams.
No, I didn't.
Well, perhaps that's because you were him. As I said, dreams are not always literal. What if you weren't dreaming about yourself, you were dreaming about him, Mr. UNSUB?
So he's the one that's been doing these things to these people, not me.
That's a possible explanation.
Why would I be dreaming of him? I mean, who is he?
There's one thing I want to point out about the previous clip. When they leave the restaurant, well, when Olivia stomps out of the restaurant because she's very frustrated and she's walking in front of the restaurant, and Peter comes after her because he's never seen her act like this, and obviously he's a little concerned. It just is a small thing, and you know, maybe it means nothing, but it's just one of those things I think that the actors put some thought into and I think really helps to build the character. We see Peter grab her hand or grab her arm to stop her as she's stomping away. And she doesn't get upset about that. You know, he's obviously concerned, and we haven't seen something like this before. I mean, obviously when you're watching it, you get the sense of that tension that he doesn't understand what is happening with her. I mean, she's crazy. You know, she's just so intense on this, you know, when it comes to what's happening around her. And we don't see that very often, you know, interaction like that. And I just liked it. It's just a little thing. And, you know, when things like that pop up and they stick in my head, if it's sticking in my head, then I need to bring it up because I'm not overly critical. I mean, those of you who listen to the podcast know that I kind of love everything, even the crap stuff that's out there. I can put it in its own category and say, okay, you know, I'm loving this. I'm enjoying this. You know what I mean? You know, I think Megaforce is a brilliant piece of cinematography, for God's sake. You know, they did a whole show about it. So, you know that I'm not too particular about these things. Anyway, the next clip is a great clip between Olivia and Broyles, and I'm just going to play the clip, you know, and but I cannot get enough of the growth between these two, because, you know, we don't get to see a lot of Broyles, but we see him pop up all over the place in the episodes, but there's not like a Broyles centric episode or something like that. And I just, you know, he is such an intense actor, you know, when he is on screen. And when he's there, he doesn't have to say anything, and your focus is completely on him. And I like the exchange that they have in this clip.
I have a lawsuit from a restaurant manager in New York. I have unauthorized allocation of agency time and resources. I have access to government databases for personal use. What's going on?
Someone's been coming into my dreams, and he's either been making me kill people or he's been killing people and making me watch.
You know how this sounds.
These things that we see every day, these things that we investigate, they're happening to me.
Dunham, you understand what kind of scrutiny we're under? You're under? If Sanford Harris wanted in Washington,
I know.
You can't unofficially investigate a case where you're the subject.
I'm sorry.
Dunham, why didn't you come to me?
I should have. But I didn't want to sound crazy.
So, maybe...
maybe it's better if I just take some time off, just a few days to work this out. Maybe just like a short leave. I need to do this.
Agent Francis, we have a status change. I'm opening a new case. Subject's name is Nick Lane. Agent Dunham is on point. Please give her whatever assistance she needs.
Thank you.
Dunham. Take care of yourself.
I will.
I love that scene. I know that that's weird, but man, do I love that scene. It's like in season one, it is in my top 10 favorite scenes. I just love it. You have to go back and pop in the DVD and watch this scene. I just love it. It's just a fantastic scene between these two characters. And you compare that with the first episode when they meet, and even in the second episode when he's trying to invite her onto the team, you know, as the episodes go on, and the growth that they show is I think one of the things is that with her and Peter, it's an emotional, not only a trust, but obviously there's some attraction there as time goes on, because she's seeing this side of Peter, the way he interacts with his father, that helps to grow that relationship. But her and Broyles, it's rather professional. And granted, the trust is involved, but man, I just love that scene. And I love the fact that Broyles, you know, for that second, he's just like, you know, this is crazy. And then she's like, you know, well, look at what we do every day, you know? And I just love it. Just a great scene. I know I got a little excited there. Sorry about that. Okay. They've narrowed down their suspect, and they know his name is Nick, and they know that, he was in a mental hospital. His name is Nick Lane. And so they are going to go, and they're following up on what happened. So I'm going to have two clips here I'm going to put together. I tried to cut out some of the stuff in between, but two clips, Olivia and Peter arriving at the hospital, and then them talking to the doctor and trying to get a little bit of background information on Nick.
You know, until this year, I'd never actually been to a mental hospital.
Learn to like new things.
Maybe I never gave it enough thought. what Walter went through. I only ever saw it from my own perspective. His being crazy was something that he did to us. To my mother and me. It wasn't something that happened to him.
Well, you were young.
I'm not young anymore. It must be a terrible thing to not be able to trust your own mind.
Yeah.
Hey.
Nick was an interesting person. He had a kind of brightness to him.
The intelligent.
Yes, quite, but not what I mean. He had an emotional brightness. If he was happy, he would light up a room. Sad, he was like a black hole that would suck you right down with him. Hyperemotive is the clinical term. Put simply, his affect was highly infectious.
Was he dangerous?
No. Oh, if anything, his ideation tended toward self-contempt, toward the suicidal. Although he did suffer from some psychosis when his delusions were florid.
What sort of delusions?
Typical paranoid fare. Nick was convinced he'd been recruited as a child for a series of top-secret experiments, that he was being prepared to serve as a soldier in the coming war against denizens of a parallel universe.
Boom! You ready for it? Here comes the clip that makes this whole episode. And this is going to tie into the whole season. This is a big freaking deal. And as quick as this episode goes by, I mean, I'm only 20 minutes in and we're better than halfway through the episode. I mean, as quick as this episode goes by, there might be few sound clips, but my God, this is a big deal. Okay. And if I have not mentioned it, in a while, the Fringe breakdowns, spoiler filled. Okay. I try not to go too far past this, you know, the current episode in order to give spoilers so you can follow along. You can watch the show and, you know, listen to the show, watch Fringe and then listen to Sci-Fi Dig. Oh my God, I can't talk today, but I'm really excited about this episode. I don't know. I need to calm down. Of course, I'm on my second cup of coffee. Don't drink a lot of coffee. Really, really keyed up right now. Anyway, going to play the clip. Very exciting stuff. And this is a great scene in the car. And you need to, when you're driving in the car, you need to go back and watch this. You should go back and watch it all. But this is just good stuff. Good stuff.
So when did they recruit him?
How old is he?
What?
Nick Lane, what year was he born?
1979.
Where?
Jacksonville, Florida. Aren't you from Jacksonville?
We need to talk to your father.
Why? What do you think you know?
We need to talk to him now.
Where is the fire?
I've always loved that expression, which is curious, since my lab assistant was killed in a fire.
What can you tell me about Cortexafan?
Oh, that takes me back. I remember Belly whipping up a peyote mash.
Walter!
Cortexafan was a highly experimental drug. William theorized that it might enhance certain abilities in predisposed children.
Let me guess. You experimented on people.
Oh, no. Not me. William. We had quite a disagreement about it.
What abilities?
It worked on perception. Carlos Castaneda, Aldous Huxley, Werner Heisenberg, all focused on one single elementary truth. Perception is the key to transformation.
Reality is both subjective and malleable. If you can dream a better world, you can make a better world.
Or perhaps travel between them.
What did you just say?
So if Nick Lane was treated with Cortexafan, he could change reality with his thoughts. He could make somebody do something just by thinking it.
Not his thoughts. How you feel determines your view of the world.
You're saying that Cortexafan worked on feelings.
That's reductive, but it's essentially yes.
What if Nick Lane wasn't affecting people with his thoughts? What if he was affecting them with his emotions? The psychiatrist said that he was suicidal, right? They said that his moods were contagious. What if he was on the platform because he was considering killing himself?
Oh, my.
Look at the restaurant. All happy couples. It triggers his own fear of abandonment, and that woman caught his mood.
For the sake of argument, let's say that Nick's emotions are contagious. They're like a virus. Maybe he's even doing this unwittingly, but it still doesn't explain how it is that you're seeing him in your dreams.
If William had followed the usual procedures... You see, often when we experimented on children...
Okay, can we just stop right there and analyze that sentence for a second?
We would put them in pairs, like the buddy system in summer camp.
Listen to him. He's comparing human experimentation to summer camp.
This pairing kept them from becoming frightened or feeling isolated. Sometimes an intense bond could form. A bond which could be greatly amplified by a drug like Cotexafam.
Stop it, both of you. You're creeping me out. Olivia was never treated with Cortexafan.
Is that true, Agent Dunham?
I might have been.
What? That's good news.
How is that good news, Walter?
This Nick Lane fellow of yours, it means I may know how to find him.
I believe that that would be double boom. So big, big drop here. I know that in the past episodes we have seen that Olivia does believe she's been treated with this drug. You have to remember, though, when you're watching these episodes, that Walter does not remember everything. I mean, this comes up multiple times, and, you know, where he's just like, I don't know, I can't remember. And it's upsetting him. You know, when there are scenes where he gets upset because he cannot remember what he has done. And a lot of times it's not until it's brought directly to his attention that he starts to recall those memories and, you know, realizes what has happened. Now, he's trying to look on the positive side, and obviously Peter's a little devastated, and Olivia is a little scared because, you know, she's been treated with this drug as well. They don't know what's going to happen. And, you know, the general idea here is that Nick is kind of projecting his emotions, and because he is doing that, that is why these people are killing one another. So the next scene is they're trying to go to the building. Nick is at a building and he has hostages at the top of the building and he's controlling them, and they're all standing on the edge of the building and he's in control of them. And so they are headed there to try to see what they can do. And I have a short clip of Walter in a car with the group, and where he is trying to explain what could possibly be happening and what they have to be aware of.
Maybe turning into a walking epidemic. As his emotions become more intense, he may become more contagious.
Great. Why can't more angry ever translate into less dangerous? What are we supposed to do if we find him anyway? I mean, if we get too close to him, aren't we going to be infected with his emotions too?
Yes. But perhaps Agent Dunham would not.
Why?
You are also treated with Cortexafan. It might afford you some degree of immunity from Nick's abilities.
Why do I get the feeling you're not telling us everything?
Because I don't know everything.
That haunting music in Walter's voice got really deep there. He says, I don't know everything. That's kind of creepy. But again, it's just a reminder that, you know, he does not know everything. He does not remember everything that happened. He just doesn't know. And anyway, so the next clip. This is it. I know I'm going fast. I'm talking fast, but I'm so excited. And we're only 28 minutes in. I'm clearing this episode, baby. But it's just there's just so much happening for the overall season and the series. But there's just not. But the way we're just flying through. A lot of this is visual on this episode. Anyway, I am rambling. So the next clip is of Olivia goes on a roof and she has this. this conversation with Nick. And I'm going to play this. And I have a couple more clips here, but I'm just saying that we are up to two booms. We have boom number three coming up here towards the end. So everybody just, you know, hang with me here. Hang with me.
Nick? Nick Lane? You hurt me. You hurt me, Kane. You were always a strong one. Whenever I got scared, you could make me feel better. Do you remember all of it? I'm sorry, no, I don't.
It's okay. I think they meant for us to forget. I just couldn't. I did what they told us.
I waited, Olive. The soldier to come is both natural and unnatural. I waited to be called up. Stay fit, stay focused, stay ready. I wore the blacks and grays. I blended in. But the call never came. It never came. Then that man with the glasses, he showed up at the hospital. He spoke all the old words. He said, "They're coming." Needed warriors. He said, "What was written will come to pass." He said he knew how to wake me up. I shouldn't have listened to him. Sometimes when we wake up, it can't be put back to sleep.
Nick, you don't have to do this.
I want to stop hurting people. Take it. Take it. Shoot me. Please, Olive. I can't fight this much longer.
Listen to me. Come down.
They did, Mark. I do hope Agent Dunham meant to do that.
Shoot me, or I will jump, and they will all jump with me.
Now, of course, the crash that you heard is him sending one of the people off the building. He's controlling them and just have them step off, and Walter and Peter are having a conversation, and he smashes into the car, and Walter has that that bit that he adds there. Ultimately, what happens is that she can't bring herself to shoot him and kill him. So she shoots him in the leg and puts him down. And then the next clip is of her having a conversation with Broyles, and they're explaining a little bit about Nick Lane and, you know, what is going to happen to him now.
Nick Lane's parents died several years ago in a car accident. His lawyer's identity appears to have been falsified. We've repeated our request to Massive Dynamic for information regarding the Cortex Event protocols. But according to Nina Sharp, the names of the participants were deleted from the records. And you still have no memory of the trials being treated with the drug?
No.
But he does?
Yes.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know.
You saved his life. He's being kept in a drug-induced coma.
For how long?
Indefinitely.
He said sometimes what we wake up can't be put back to sleep. I wonder if he was right.
Are you all right, Dunham?
Yes.
All right, so you remember how I said there's going to be a three-boom episode? There's actually going to be four. One of them, you know, you could take it or leave it, but definitely three, but I'm going to go for four here. So anyhow, we see Nick Lane. He's in a hospital bed, and they're keeping him in a coma or whatever because I'm not sure what he can do if he wakes up. You know, Olivia is kind of, she can't remember the Cortexafan trials, but she is definitely, I mean, I think at this point in time, it's without a doubt that she was treated. And then we get this last clip, which removes any doubt at all of what happened. Walter goes back to the lab. He starts going through boxes and he finds this old videotape, hooks up a VCR. Remember VCRs? And he puts in the tape to play. I'm going to play, obviously, this is just a voiceover of none other than Leonard Nimoy, who is is talking over the tape, and you can hear the two of them, and we see a little girl. She's just huddled in the corner, and there's a big, big charred, like, I don't want to say charred, but obviously some sort of event has happened in this room because the paint and everything is all messed up. And she's just sitting there in the corner, and the tape is on her. And I'm going to play the audio, and then I'll talk a bit about it.
Is the incident contained?
Yes, Dr. Bell.
How bad?
Bad.
Casualties?
Not sure yet. We can't locate Brenner.
Is she okay?
She's fine.
Hell, do we know what triggered it?
Obviously, she was upset, William. It's okay. It's all right now. Nobody's angry with you. You didn't do anything bad. It's all right, Olive. Everything's going to be okay.
Amazing. It was an amazing episode. And I loved it. Just a fantastic episode. Considering how little actually happened during the episode, it is pretty outstanding. And this is one of those episodes, the first time I saw it, when I very first started watching the episode, I thought, man, I am not going to like this episode. I don't like the dream thing that I was there and let's try to figure out what's what. I've never been a huge fan of that. And as the episode progressed, I realized that, wow, it just rock solid episode, just fantastic. And everything, this is a big episode because it ties everything in the season together. And, you know, like I said, this is episode 18. So, you know, we only have a couple, I'm sorry, episode 17. So we only have a couple of episodes left here where we're going to start tying things together. And when we get to the end of the season, it's just a big wow moment. Anyway, I want to talk to you a little bit about what the, let's do the glyphs. The glyphs spell out Belly, who is William Bell. And if you can't tell, obviously Leonard Nimoy was voicing him in that video there where they were watching him. And we have, as Peter and Olivia arrive at the building where Nick is on the top of the building with all the, we say hostages, you see the observer, he crosses the street there. So I have a screenshot of that that will be in with the show notes as always. And just a great episode. So much happened. And this is what I like. These are the kind of shows that I like. I know we can think of a lot of them where it's just like, you know, you get a little bit, little bit, little bit. And then suddenly you have an episode where not a whole lot happens, but all everything that does happen really matters. And it ties everything together. And you're just starting to get the general idea. So to recap quickly, you know, Olivia had was when she was a child, she was treated with Cortexafan, which was this drug that, you know, the idea was able to was to give them the ability to, you know, access other parts of their mind. And this is going to play a big part in the upcoming the rest of Fringe. Actually, it happened up until the end. This is going to play a big part of it. And we have we also have, let's see, the fact that, you know, William Bell, we get to hear his voice for the first time. And, you know, obviously Leonard Nimoy. And spoilers, people, Leonard Nimoy is actually William Bell. So we're going to see him at some point in time. He's going to make an appearance. We have a confrontation between with Peter, Olivia, and Walter over what was done to Olivia over the Cortexafran trials and the children as well. We have Walter being upset because he cannot remember everything that happened, and he's trying desperately to figure out what it is that he has done in the past. And wow, just a lot of stuff there. So anyway, this was episode 17 from season 1. The episode was entitled Bad Dreams. I highly recommend it. I think we can skip the first half of the episode if you just want to get to the meat of it. Again, not that I recommend, but I'm saying for those of you that have viewed Fringe before and you want to get the highlights, that's just good stuff in there. One other little tidbit that I want to mention, and I found this after doing a little bit of research here. I try to pick up on these little things, but sometimes when you start getting into the episode, it starts becoming fun to try to find little mistakes. But when Olivia and the team enter Nick's home, there is all kind of crazy stuff on the walls, newspaper clippings and all kind of stuff. And one of the articles says genetically modified children, the future of the superhuman race. Now the genetically modified children is pretty clear on the headline. But from what I've read, if you stop and you zoom in, If you can zoom in, if you stop and you look at it, the article is actually about the risks associated with tracing other cell phone numbers. And I thought that was kind of funny because obviously that was just, they just kind of slapped that on there and didn't think anybody would pick up on that. But in the age of HD, and of course, you know, we were just kind of entering this really for television shows at this time, you know, clearly people are going to pick up on those things. But other than that, that's about it. Again, episode, what did I tell you it was? Episode 17, Bad Dreams of season one. We have 3 episodes left of season one. And man, this is where it starts to build. Okay. From episode 17 on, everything starts to build up. And I have to say that even in season 2, episode 1, we still have a lot of momentum going, you know, before we enter into the season and things kind of even out. But just a lot of, we're getting all the payoff now. Well, not all the payoff, but a majority of the payoff. We're getting a lot of that now that we've invested time in this show, and we're going to start getting the payoff. Bad Dreams. Good stuff. Last week, I talked about the Star Trek DVD, the TNG DVD, Best of Both Worlds, coming out on Blu-ray. And I wish that they do more of these smaller sets, because I just don't see spending the near $100 a set on the Blu-ray stuff. I don't have any Star Trek on DVD other than the original series. So, you know, it's not as though if I bought it, I have another option, you know. Oddly enough, the when I wanted to buy TOS on DVD, I couldn't find the DVDs anywhere. And the Blu-rays, when I found them on Amazon, the Blu-rays were like a dollar more. So, you know, of course I went with the Blu-ray because it has all the new effects and all the new specials and things like that, the features on them. But I was at one of the entertainment stores the other day, and I saw that they had all 3 of the original series on DVD. And of course it wasn't super cheap either. I think they were still $50 a piece. But anyhow, I've been enjoying the 2 TNG sets that I have are the first one they released on Blu-ray, which I really enjoyed, and Best of Both Worlds, which is one of my favorite episodes. Now, the first thing I have to say is that there's a lot of packaging involved with this. Okay, first of all, you have a plastic sleeve that comes off, and then you have a paper sleeve over the DVD that has the flip part that covers Picard's face. It turns him into a Borg. You open it up and it's just him and the crew in the background. Then you close it and he becomes Locutus. Then you slide that sleeve off, and then you have the Blu-ray box with the DVD, and it also comes with the ultraviolet code. Now, I bought it. It's been in my cart to pre-order, and when I did the show, I remembered I hadn't pre-ordered, so I went ahead and did that, and I got it. I couldn't wait to sit down and watch it. Now, the first thing I have to say is that it looks good. The colors really pop, and the makeup effects you always notice what a good makeup team they had, because even though you couldn't tell before, you can definitely tell now. When you're looking at Data's head and all the circuitry in there, and you're looking at Locutus and how they put all the Borg paraphernalia on him and around him, it looks really good. And there's a couple scenes that looked a little bit shaky to me, but still better than anything that's on DVD or on the streaming services right now. I was really happy with it. But wow, I popped it in, and man, memories come flooding back about why one of the reasons I love this show. And I mean, Shelby was always one of those characters that I thought I wish that she had more to do on TNG and maybe some of the other Star Trek franchises. I know that she did she was in the books by Peter David, I believe. And I read the first couple of those, and I really enjoyed them. They were good books, and it seems as though the character was written pretty close to of what, you know, you saw in TNG. But I highly recommend it. I think it's like around $15. And I mean, of course, if you have TNG on Blu-ray, you don't need it. If you have TNG, you might not want to buy it if you have the regular sets. But the Blu-ray looks really good, and I was real happy with how good the colors really stood out. And, you know, the scenes that I really was kind of discerning over where they had, like, tech and things like that I wanted to see. But and the episode itself was really well done. I just really enjoy those episodes put together like that. They worked real well. They have they have the to-be-continued part in the center, and then after the first episode, then you jump right into the other one. But just just really well done. I enjoyed watching that, and I think I might go back and watch it again because I was doing a few other things when I started watching it, and I really want to focus on it. It just was a good purchase for me. And a non-sci-fi movie that we went to see, this is definitely worth a rental, people. It is called Pain and Gain, and I thought it was going to be more of an action film, and it's more of a like a dark comedy film. And we went to see that because we were going to go see a movie and there was really nothing playing. I was like, well, let's go check this out. So we went and we saw it. And really enjoyed the film. It's a little long, I think, for what they were doing. But my God, this is based on a true story. And these criminals were stupid. But I highly recommend renting it. You know, I don't know if you want to pay the money to go to the theater to see it. I don't think you want to buy it on DVD. But I highly recommend renting it. It's got a lot of really good comedic moments that just make you kind of laugh out loud. Where you just like, you just put your head in your hands and going, my God, what were they thinking? How did that was just a bad idea. You know, some of the things that these guys did, you mean, the idea is that they kidnap a rich man trying to get him to sign everything over. And, I think the important part of the movie is when the guy tells him, he's like, I just don't want everything that you have. I want you not to have it, because he just don't like the guy. He's just a real jerk. And he's played by Tony Shalhoub, and he does a great job. And there's a scene with a chainsaw and bodies, and they're so mad because they bought this electric chainsaw and it doesn't work. And the guy, he's like, oh, it's like, it's made in China. It's China junk. I hate it. And so they take it back to the Home Depot and they're like, hey, this doesn't work. It's junk. You know, we want another one. And she's looking at the chainsaw. And she's like, sir, there appears to be fur in it. And it's not fur, it's hair. And there's also a little bit of blood dripping off of it. And she's like, whatever, just go pick out a new one. And the whole thing is just, it's just completely ridiculous. But I wanted to mention it. It's kind of funny. And of course, I can't wait for Iron Man 3. I've been really amping up for this, and you need to go check out that Pacific Rim trailer. My God, it looks like it's going to be so much fun. I mean, giant monster, giant robot guy. Come on. It's going to be amazing. I can't wait for it. Anyhow, that's the show. I will talk to everybody next time. This is Aaron for the Sci-Fi Dig podcast. Over and out. It's not enough.